hope that you continue to have your dial tuned right where it is, right at this very moment, WBAI 99.5 FM. And we're also available online at WBAI.org. And you should tell somebody about that as well. All right. It's 1 p.m. in New York City. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And with you today, talking about, you know, gossip is such an interesting thing, gossip and rumors. We've all seen both sides of gossip. One side is the warm feeling you get from spending time with a friend and sharing stories about mutual acquaintances. That could be fun. The other side is the stomach-churning anger, shame, and frustration you feel when you realize somebody is spreading bad news about you. You want to be on the right side of gossip, but sometimes it illuminates, while other times it just burns you. When it's good, it binds people and communities together. Think about life on the savannah, not in Georgia, but on the savannah, where when you're on the savannah and you have these number of tools that we humans developed, we developed a voice, right? A vocal box that makes certain sounds, that turns them into words, that turns into a vocabulary that now can be used for communication. And what does communication do? Communication is a tool. It's like having a stick. It's like having a big claw. It's like having fangs. You now have a tool for which you could survive. And one of the tools you have is to talk about what's safe and what's not safe. Eat the red berries, don't eat the blackberries. Eat the green things, don't eat the red mushrooms. You know what I mean? Those are good. And then stories. I heard that the person in the other cave was eating brown mushrooms and they died. These stories can make the difference for survival for the human race. And it did. So gossip has had its purpose. It has its meaning. And rumors also have a great deal of meaning. Because if you heard them, you know, when people get scared, rumors become some of the only way that you could get information. If you want to look at gossip as a bad, bad thing, which I sometimes, if I think about it, I will never be engaged in trashing people. I try never to trash people. I don't want to hear people trashing other people. That's my own system. I don't like it. I used to do it. I don't like it. I don't want to do that. However, if you were to outlaw gossip at a corporation, you would lose one of the main lines of communication. What people talk to, in that you cannot forbid it, because it brings the gripes together. And if you were a good executive, if you were somebody who ran a corporation, that's where you're going to learn what people feel. You're not going to learn by sending out a questionnaire. This is Armand DeMille with you. My guest today is Nicholas DeFonso. Dr. Nicholas DeFonso did a book called The Water Cooler Effect, and a psychologist who is exploring the extraordinary power of rumors themselves. So first I want to welcome you on air, Dr. DeFonso. Nick, are you with us? He should be there. Nick, are you there?
Happy to be here.
Yes. Let's start this off with distinguishing between what is the rumor and what is gossip. The difference.
Sure. Let me first of all just say thanks very much for allowing me to be here today, Armand. I'm really pleased to be on your Positive Mind show. I make a distinction between rumor and gossip, between pure rumor and pure gossip. Gossip is a lot of what you were just mentioning. It's evaluative social chat, usually titillating in nature about somebody's individual behavior, and they're usually not present when you talk about them. That's pure gossip. Oh, did you hear what Joe did the other day at the Christmas party? He had a lampshade on his head and was acting in a ridiculous manner. Whereas pure rumor is more about unverified information in circulation. And people are just simply trying to manage threat or make sense of things or trying to understand their worlds. Now, lots of times you get the two put together. It's sometimes difficult to differentiate between the two, but it's useful to make the distinction between pure gossip and pure rumor.
Well, pure is a tough word in there, but we'll say gossip and rumor. Rumor is kind of very important. I remember around 9/11, there were rumors all over the place, and it was rumors where you couldn't trust the information you were hearing on the news. You couldn't trust very much what people had to say, since we were in Manhattan, in New York, and the storms were, you know, the clouds were right in front of us, and we're watching it. It was through rumor that we found out most of what was real and what was not real.
That's right. In a calamitous situation like that, rumor plays a very important role. People are anxious, they are in a situation that is threatening, they're going to start sharing information with one another to try and figure out what is happening and how can I best protect myself. So the rumors turn out to be an important avenue for adapting to that particular situation or environment.
Yeah, so in a way, rumors help us make sense out of the uncertain world.
That's right, and that's the name of the first chapter of the book is "To Rumor is Human." We're sentient beings. We like to make sense of things, and we like to do things together. And if you put those two ideas together, we get shared sense making. We must make sense of the world together, and that's what I'm calling rumor. Rumor isn't just simply negative kinds of things we say about other people. It's, hey, I heard that our department's being downsized. What have you heard? Or, hey, I heard this candidate has this particular view on things. What have you heard? So it's when we compare notes with other people, try to figure out what the facts are, try to make sense of the situation. That's what I'm calling rumor. And it happens all the time. It's part of our normal human social experience. I wrote the book in order to help people do rumor better. And by that, I don't mean to help people spread rumors more effectively, but to try and understand the uncertainty within which they're placed and try to be a bit more discerning, maybe a little more trusting, a little more able to give the benefit of the doubt, especially if they're in a situation of anger or distrust or conflict. And I hope that by exploring rumor scientifically, this book will help people to be able to do those sorts of things.
Okay, well, let's do it even now. Let's talk about the basis of it or the history of rumor. Mm-hmm. When you say explore it scientifically, how do you do it?
Okay, well, rumor has been explored by social psychologists and sociologists for over 70 years. It's a tough thing to study, but it's actually becoming easier because many of the rumors that are available now are available through emails on the Internet or through blogs on the Internet through these discussions. So they're automatically archived. But in studies that I've done, we've done experiments where we expose people to scenarios in which they imagine themselves in a particular situation. Then we expose them to rumors, and then we see how they react or behave, or we see their level of belief in these rumors, and so forth. One situation in a particular study, series of studies I'm doing now, we have groups of people come in, and we put them all on a computer, and then we connect them by a computer and expose them to a variety of rumors, and we give them the task of trying to figure out the truth of the rumor through group discussion. And then our measure at the end of each scenario is how strongly they believe the rumor. So there's a variety of ways that we can study rumor. It's a little tougher to study because it is so fleeting and it is kind of interactive and it happens kind of spur of the moment, but we're still able to do it scientifically.
Well, you know, there's been a recent in the news when somebody has a political leaning and they don't want to look like they have a political leaning, they have this new phrase that they use, which is, it's been said that. You know, and it's this weapon that could be used, you know, that the president could say, you know, it's been said that we're really losing the war in Iraq and we're not, or it's been said that we're coming to a major accomplishment. It's been said that is using the concept of rumor.
That's exactly right. And a colleague of mine, Gary Fine, has stated that the way rumors are phrased, when they're phrased like that, it actually helps to avoid the responsibility for what you're saying. It helps people avoid taking responsibility for what they're saying. And that's one of the appeals of rumor. You can kind of throw it out there, kind of test the waters without actually being pinned down for saying it.
Well, somebody once said, you know, if it's in the news, therefore it's a fact. What would separate the news from being other than rumor? I mean, they have a certain requirement to validate their sources.
That's right. Well, journalists are really pretty good overall. And it's not necessarily because they're naturally discerning people, but they're held accountable for what they say. They could lose their jobs or be sued for willfully disseminating false facts. We talked about September 11th, right? A study was done comparing news reports to blogosphere reports. And it turns out that there were only four incorrect stories reported in major newspapers in the weeks following September 11th. And half of those stories were it was understandable why they were false, because citizens had come forth and given false information. And they were quickly corrected. Whereas in the blogosphere, where people are typically not held accountable for what they say, we get all kinds of extreme variations of stories and accounts. So there's that old saying, don't believe everything you hear in the newspaper, but what that saying also at the same time implies that most of the stuff you read in the newspaper you can believe. And the reason for that is that the people who are disseminating the information, the journalists and the editors, are held accountable. If they start systematically messing up on this accuracy question, then people will stop buying their newspaper. They'll get a bad reputation.
Like somebody spreading a rumor that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It's been said.
Well, that's right. You know, the ironic thing about that particular rumor, that it was possibly started by Saddam Hussein himself.
Sure.
In order to discourage his opponents from taking over. And then it was this story in the Los Angeles Times proposed that his detractors spread that rumor among the intelligence community in order to get U.S. aid in toppling him. It looks like they were successful in that.
So rumors are often very efficient at being a major tool of destruction. I mean, you could slide it. You can get a whole bunch of people lined up on your side. I remember the moment of 9/11, when I was actually at a physician's office with a friend of mine, and saw the airplane crash into the building. And so people said, you know, we saw it on a television because we were like 2 miles away. And people said, an airplane just crashed into the building. And I said, oh, did that really happen? Let me look. And I said, was that staged? My first doubt. Number two, was that an accident? Of course it was an accident. And my mind and the people around me were searching for somebody say something that's going to make sense of this. Yeah, it's on the CBS reproduction series. It's on the Scare You series. Tell me it's not real. And there's this part of me that was yearning to hear something that would say to me, it is not what it seems. And I think there's that part of people when it comes to tragedy. They want to hear it's worse than it seems, or it's better than it seems, but it's not just what it seems.
Well, absolutely. And I think from that really dramatic example from your own life, there's several things we can see. One is you recognize there's a motivation. You want to hear a certain thing. You want to hear, oh, this is just a, you know, a terrible mistake. We're not under attack, so on and so forth. But the stronger part of you overruled that. You wanted to know what the facts were, regardless of how badly it made you feel or how, or what the consequences were. You wanted to know the facts. That's the interesting thing I've found. I'm not primarily pessimistic. In fact, overall, when it comes down to things, I'm somewhat optimistic about the process of rumor. I think that in the end, people's desire for the facts outweighs or at least curbs any of these other kind of motivations for hearing a particular rumor or spreading a particular rumor.
More than your personal prejudice, if you're jealous of the woman who's walking through getting all the attention of all the other men and you hear a rumor about her, do you really want to hear the fact, or do you want to hear something that's going to shade people to dislike her a little bit, and that you want to be on the side, you want to hear not fact, but you want to heal real, give me a nice destructive rumor about her. Give me some fact about her that would make her appear less attractive to all the other guys in the office.
Armand, I see you're very insightful. As you can see from your example, there are two parts to it. I want to hear, or at least part of me wants to hear, something that will put her down so that I'll build myself up by comparison. You know, it's the Mr. Clean effect. One study was done where people were taking a self-esteem inventory, and halfway through, in one condition, Mr. Clean walks in, you know, handsome, smells good, looks muscular guy, and he starts to fill out his self-esteem questionnaire. And in another condition, Mr. Dirty walks in. He's kind of tattered and smells bad and is carrying a comic book, and he starts to fill out his self-esteem inventory. So then you finish your self-esteem inventory, and it turns out that when Mr. Clean comes in, sits next to you, your self-esteem goes down. When Mr. Dirty comes in, sits next to you, your self-esteem goes up. So the rumors perform this sort of function, or they can perform this sort of function. When we hear something bad about somebody, some dirty little fact about somebody, it may have the effect. We may want to hear it because it kind of builds us up by comparison. But on the other hand, and at the same time, we are aware of the cues for how accurate or how truthful that information is. At least we're aware that we should be asking those kinds of questions. How accurate or truthful is it?
That's
what I find again.
Sorry,
go ahead.
There seems to be a part of all humans, as we evolved, that we had to have a lie detector built into our brains. You know, skepticism seemed to be part of our survival because we see so many things. I mean, we learn to trap animals by hiding ourselves behind bushes and making ourselves look like a bush. You know, maybe not a George one, but any kind of. Or we make ourselves, we camouflage ourselves. We wear camouflage clothing as a way of getting to the animals. And the animals who are on their hunt for other animals, they create certain illusions so that you would, you know, if they want a gazelle to walk into a place, you kind of hide yourself as a tiger. So there seems to be the lie detector that is built into us for our survival. And this lie detector, the skepticism, seems to be something that says, you know, all right, now, is it true or is it not true? I want it to be true if it's in my favor, but is it true is always the question we have to ask, we want to ask. And there's a bunch of us who are innocents who also feel they don't want to question anything. They just want to believe everything. So when it comes to rumors, where is your lie detector? What happens? Does it go on suspension?
That's a really good question. I've often wondered that myself when I ask the question, why don't more people check more often? Why don't they check the information that they hear and then pass on more often than they do? And the answer seems to be that most of the time we rely on one another. We trust one another. And it works. We don't end up dying or some great catastrophe happened. We don't end up being sued for spreading that nasty little rumor or forwarding that ridiculous email to somebody. Most of the time, it kind of works. It lubricates our social relationships. People want to hear some of these rumors that we spread to them. It's never questioned. And it kind of signifies that we're part of the group. We have the same kind of understanding in life. And I think that lie detector part takes a second place. It never completely goes away. And you're absolutely right. It is very important, especially in cases where if I don't detect the lie, it can be it can mean something bad for me. If I don't figure out the truth in this particular situation about the downsizing of my department, it could mean that I lose my job. But in these other cases, it's not so critically important for survival. So it kind of is more immediately beneficial to me if I just spread this rumor. People like to hear it. It might be entertaining. It might be what they want to hear. And I know no one will question me about it.
Somewhere in life, we wonder, if the great liars or the people who present you with facts that actually get disproven haven't given you a gift in a way to keep your senses sharp. I wonder very often if anybody really objects to the recent government that has been in power, that they've presented us with so many things that have turned out to be false, if it hasn't been a gift in many ways to have people sharpen their detectors and people saying, now, wait a minute, I don't believe anything anymore. I don't believe a single thing, There's nothing I believe. I have my hopes and dreams on a new candidate, but I want to believe everything about them. But I'm still going to have my doubts. I'm still going to have that skepticism. So it seems that there are periods of life where we want it to slide back and not have it. And then there are periods that it's kind of forced right in our face. In a way, now let me ask you something, Nick. As a psychologist who gets involved in this, what do you suggest for people to do when it comes to rumor? What do you think people should do when they hear information?
Okay, well, you should check your facts first and foremost, and have I call it a moderate degree of skepticism. And that takes an a priori commitment. I'd like to see my book changed, even if it's just a little bit, the standard norm in communication to just pass something along without feeling any responsibility to check the facts. I'd like to see just a little bit more reservation in believing something before we act on it or pass it along. So that's my suggestion.
And how would you do that? I mean, how do you check out your facts? If somebody says to you, I heard that this person's got cancer, what do you do before you pass it along? Do you call up? Do you say, hey, you got cancer? Or do you try to validate it? Do you hear it from three or four different sources? Or if somebody is doing business but they seem to be unethical and you hear that they're being unethical, you try to check it, but it's very hard to check it. I mean, when your sister comes to you and says, I'm thinking about doing business with that guy, do you keep your mouth shut or do you somehow make sure that you're telling the person, I want you to know, I've heard this and I can't check the fact. And that I have this skepticism based on something I've heard, but I have not checked my facts, but I want you to hear the information.
Yeah, sometimes it's messy, but lots of times it's not. So depending on the context of the situation, whether you can indeed check the facts. Now, lots of rumors we hear or we get over the Internet, there are hoax-busting sites that you can go to immediately and check them out, Snopes.com, TruthOrFiction.com, AboutUrbanLegends.com, and there are many rumors there that have been investigated by these folks, and they offer evidence one way or the other, whether or not they're true or false.
Well, it's kind of amazing, isn't it, that now you can take a rumor and run it through one of the websites, and they will actually give you truth or fiction. They'll say, here's what we found out. I know about a lot of the things about be careful, don't use your computer to press the letter A, because a bomb has been set off. Well, you can now check it out, and people will say it's a hoax or it's not a hoax.
Well, that's right, and I've been hit with that rumor several times. I no longer no longer believe it because I did check it out on Snoops.com.
Snoops, but of course, and S-N-O-O-P-S?
That's right, S-N-O-P-E-S.com, Snoops.com.
Snoops.com, good.
Yes, Snoops was a set of characters in William Faulkner novels who were of disreputable character. And I think that's why the owners of that site may have picked the name for that particular hoax-busting site. Because sometimes rumors are quite disreputable.
Mm-hmm. And I know there are also rumors about professionals. You know, you can now check people's professional records. In fact, the Internet has kind of made the whole world wide open. You know?
The Internet has made it easier to check. It's also made it easier, on the other hand, to spread these rumors far and wide and quickly. But so there's these two forces sort of in tension with one another. Sometimes I get asked the question, how has the Internet affected the spread of rumor, the prevalence of rumor? And I think the jury is out. On the one hand, it can make these rumors just incredibly damaging and widespread, far-reaching, and fantastically quick. But on the other hand, you can just as quickly dial up Snopes.com and figure out that it's false and spread a retraction. So if there's an active discussion of a matter on the Internet or in the office or over the water cooler, and if the people in that discussion have a diverse set of opinions, then they want to figure out the facts. Their prime motivation is to figure out the facts. Then I'm relatively optimistic that the facts will emerge. But if the people in the discussion are all like-minded and biased in one particular way, and they're not primarily interested in ferreting out the facts, they just want to feel better, or they have an axe to grind, or whatever their motivation is apart from ferreting out the facts, then I'm less optimistic about the facts appearing. And the problem with the web is that the way the web is structured kind of hinders that kind of diverse discussion, because conservative weblogs, for example, are overwhelmingly hyperlinked to other conservative weblogs, and liberal weblogs are overwhelmingly hyperlinked to other liberal weblogs. There's very little cross-hyperlink connection. So in that particular area where rumors hinge upon ideological factors, both sides seem to live in an echo chamber.
My guest is Dr. Nicholas DeFonso. The name of the book, The Water Cooler Effect. A good book, and it's good because it would also be good for educational organizations. I think it's something that would be almost a course that you would teach children. You know, it's like, because children are the place where it starts. That's where they learn. That's where they try to hear, and they hear it being repeated. What do you as a parent do with your children when you repeat rumors? How do you teach them to check their facts? How do you try to tell them not just what's right and wrong, but how for themselves they could distinguish and they could learn? So this is Armand DeMille, guest Nicholas DeFonso, The Water Cooler Effect. Thank you for being with us, Nicholas.
It's been my pleasure, Armand.
Okay, we'll speak to you again. We'll be taking calls when we get back from our break. We're going to be taking a short break. And we want to hear your calls about gossip and rumor and how it's affected you and what you think of it. But when you talk to us, please talk to us in a more personal way about its effect on you, not just what you think about it. You know what I mean? Because we like to get personal here at The Positive Mind. And you could always hear us streaming on the web, either by going to WBAI.org or going to ThePositiveMind.com. Either one. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Let's see if I can find you some music that will fit the theme today.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener-supported and non-commercial.
Thank you. is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, right, your comments, questions, and observations.
Five,
that's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
One, go.
Wondering how I knew about your plans to make me blue with that other guy that you knew before. Well, between the two of us guys, you know I loved you more. Oh, it took me by surprise, I must say. I found out yesterday. You know I heard it through the grapevine. No, not much longer would you be mine. Yes, I heard it through the grapevine. I'm just about to lose my mind. Lose my mind. Lose my mind. I know a man ain't supposed to cry. Tears I can't hold inside. Losing you within my life, you see. You mean that much to me. You could have told me yourself that you found someone else. Instead, I heard it through the grapevine. Not much longer would you be mine. Yes, I really did. I heard it through the grapevine. And I'm really just about to lose my mind. Lose my mind. Lose my mind. Just about to.
Took you through that, huh? That was Tuxedo Moon doing I Heard It Through the Grapevine, a remarkable rendition. This is Dave Cruzan, of course. So, hearing it through the grapevine, my friends, it's kind of quite a thing, you know? What gets around? What goes around? What's it going to be? What part are you, you know? I mean, if you... You spit in the ocean, eventually comes right back to you, they say. See, that's the existence of these clan-dwelling primates who subsisted by foraging and hunting, you know? It's only in recent biological times that we left the world of clan-dwelling primates for the world of agriculture, city settlements, and eventually, right, eventually, we got to business organizations. So I talked about some of these elements at work. You know, the first element is the development of the thorax and vocal cords. You get this vocal cord, you get this windpipe full of sounds, right? And then you have this language, which is the second thing that happens, 13,000 words. By age of six, raising to 60,000 words for the average adult. 60,000 words, most of you know. And then, thirdly, the large and complicated brain that evolution gave us creates a language that has also mastered the politics of complex social living. our mental design also, on top of this, on top of having the ability to make a sound, then having language, and then creating language and communication, is we also have an intelligence. And intelligence is the ability to empathize and read signs that indicate each other's motives and emotions. And then we have on top of that what I was talking about, which is the cheat detection, a key skill for the human tribe. The ability to tell when somebody is lying or cheating. That's how you get through. These tools allow us to gossip. But what role is played by over-the-fence chat? Well, okay, what do we do with it? Number one, we network. As social animals, we are social conscious, you know, and for a good reason. Because negotiating the social pathways of a tribe requires a good understanding of its complexity. You can't become the chief gorilla unless you understand the way to get up there. You know, you got to work your way up. You just don't go up and bop off the other gorilla. You know, then. So there's a whole bunch of research that you have to do. You have to understand your culture. And if you want to achieve some kind of stardom or recognition, if you want to float to the top, you have to understand the society in which you're doing it. And so what you do is you want to hear from other people about the successes and failures so that you could use them to network and to move yourself up. So important part of chit-chat and gossiping is learning to position yourself. The second function of gossip is influence. Even when our social position is apparently immobile, we retain an active interest in making sure we do not lose it. We don't want to give up our social position. Even though we can't move up, we don't want to move down. We don't want to take a lesser position. And in order to hold on to the position you have, you got to have ears that are paying attention to who might be coming up. Remember, in nature, it is natural for the youngins to want to take over where the oldins have. So if the old people have a nice cave, the young ones come along and they say, hey, I'd like to live in the cave instead of living outside. Let's get rid of the old folks when they're not looking. While they're asleep, we'll just kind of throw them out. So part of what gossip does for you is it tells you to go outside and check on that. Part of what gossip does is... We're going to be right
back
with you, my friends. Okay.
Keep talking.
Okay. Part of what gossip does for you is it tells you that there's a chance for you to hold on to that which you have. Okay, self-promotion is not always a conscious strategy, but we have to kind of keep ourselves going. So learning through gossip. A third part of it is alliances. Oftentimes we use gossip for the sake of what may be pure one-on-one pleasure. This pleasure derives from the third function of gossip, alliances. It follows that people, when they maintain their alliances, they do it. Lastly, let's consider the dark side. Many people link gossip with malice. Indeed, gossip can be vicious. You know, and the dark side of it is negative gossip about third parties who, of course, have no opportunity to defend themselves is a dangerous game. It could rebound on the gossip or it could kick back right on you. You could get sued for it, for even passing the information along. So to be good at malicious gossip requires a high degree of subtlety and skill. So therefore, the ones who are the most vicious gossipers usually have an intelligence to go along with it. You just can't pass it along because it's too obvious. It gets to the person. Much malicious gossip is conducted unconsciously, an act that requires a kind of self-deception. You deceive yourself into passing along things that aren't true. And, you know, men do it too. There's a thing that women gossip more than men do. Perhaps they only do it better. Men have called it networking and women call it talking. but men do it just as frequently as women do. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I'd like to hear from you about your experience with gossip, you know? Because a key element of gossip is storytelling. We have a narrative instinct that's an essential aid to social insight and action and a great vehicle for learning. Children are irresistibly drawn to stories, and we use them to instill all of the most important ideas about what being human are. But, you know, sometimes a distorted mind will tell a child stories to scare the child. You know, if you cross the street by yourself, he was crossing the street without holding his mother's hand, and he got mowed down by a truck and smashed. I've actually heard somebody tell their child that story. And it's like, it's that kind of storytelling which is meant to scare and meant to frighten so that that person will feel more attached to you. So the bottom line is when you get involved in the negative end of gossip, sometimes the person who is telling you the gossip is trying to get you to align yourself with them out of your fear. And sometimes when you see somebody who's a vicious gossip teller, they actually have a great deal of power because you fear them. You fear that they may do this to you. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Armand. Well, with me at work, you know, oh, the gossip thing is just so, so horrible. I can't make any real alliances. I can't network, and yet people talk about me. People have told me, a guy who just retired recently, he told me, he said, oh, one day some guy came up to him and said, you're talking to Rose? What are you doing, taking notes? I mean, I just can't, you know, believe what goes on in the workplace. People will not talk to me. People, and then when I said to this guy, well, what did you say? You know, then he said he didn't say anything, you know. And I said, and he told me that when he first started working there, people said, don't talk to Rose. And he said, why not? He said, he said to me, well, you know why. I said, no, why? Why did they say that? He says, well, you know the rumors.
Well, Rose,
said, no,
Rose, stop for a moment. Let me talk to you. I've known you for many years now through the radio, and I know you're a very sensitive person and that you're very sensitive and there's a part of you that lives very much worried about what people have to say about you. You're very concerned, more concerned, so much so that you have these extra sharp antenna. It's
that
funny.
That's true, extra sharp antenna. I can sense what the people are thinking.
And so when you go around frightened of what people are thinking and saying, you give off an energy that makes people talk about you. And I know it's this funny kind of cycle.
Well, you know, it makes I feel hurt.
I don't blame you. I understand, Rose. I wish you were in a better environment where people understood you better.
There are a few. Actually, I know I'm interrupting, but there are a few, one or two that are actually, you know, that have actually sided with me. You know, one or two, you know, once there was a big to-do, the supervisor said, oh, you can't talk in a foreign language. Now, I don't speak in a foreign language, but there are people there who do, and I went and defended them. I said, what are you saying they can't talk in a foreign language, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, I came to their defense, and what
Rose,
happened?
I
got written up for speaking out of turn.
I understand, Rose.
I understand,
Rose. I really do understand.
Thank you, Armand.
Okay, nice to talk to you. Bye bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Tim Armand.
Hello, Tim.
Yeah, how you doing? I love your show.
Thank you, Tim. Thank
yeah,
you.
I had a case like that. I go to many 12-step programs.
Yes.
The only one I don't belong to is Over Workers Anonymous. You know, so I'm retired now for 9 years. I'm Tim. My name's Tim. At any rate, what happened to me is I learned. It's not only what I say, it's the way other people hear it. And I cannot be responsible for the way other people hear it. I'm responsible for what I've said. And I'm getting better at it.
So what mistakes did you used to make, Tim?
Well, the mistake I made was, it will go down as a mistake. I didn't think it was a mistake, and I'm not sure. The jury's still out. Is a member of Al-Anon owed me $5. So anyway, I talked about the fact that she owed me $5 to one other person, and that person went to her and told her that I was talking about her. And I didn't see her for many months, and finally I saw her, and she said, "I hear you talking about me behind my back." I said, "What are you talking about?" "I talked to one other person about the fact that you owed me $5. And then she said, "I don't owe you $5. And then later on, this is a long story. Anyway, earlier I was talking kind of loud, and she, and then later on I was listening, and I wanted to talk it over with her. And she started screaming out loud. And, you know, everybody's there and whatnot. So, anyway.
But, Tim, when I ask you the mistake that you used to make.
Yeah.
Not where the jury's out, but what in the past, before.
The mistake is not going right up to her and say, "Where's my $5?
No, and it's also something else. Yes, you didn't deal with her directly, but in the past, Tim, you weren't as sensitive as you are now. As you've gotten older, you've gotten to listen to people and hear people on a different level. You no longer have the judgment that you have. You're not as critical as people as you used to be. And I could tell you, I hear your voice softening. The mistake you used to make is that you were not tuned in to what people were feeling. And the truth is, now you are. So now you're a different man. And you're learning. You're learning to be aware of what other people feel. And that's all new territory for you. And that's part of being sober, you know?
I have time to read a short poem from Eli Jackson Bear. It was on his show.
Sure, I'd love
you. You going to have him on?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Anyway, this is by Ruth L. Swartz. And it's entitled "Dog on the Floor in the Pet Food Aisle." It's so simple, really. The tenderness we need lives everywhere. There is no place it does not live. And we seek it savagely, and we throw and hurl and fling ourselves towards the brass ring of it, as if there were a narrow chance, a shining and unlikely prize. It is hard to pinch the air between our fingers, but we are determined. It is hard to survive by denying ourselves, but we are accustomed. It is hard to live inside the flawed and greedy chambers we believe ourselves to be, but we have strapped our bodies in to be, we have strapped our bodies in, and we watch our lives through airplane windows, small and dim and scared. And in so, life noses up slowly before us like a black dog, its brown eyes steady as the sun, its belly in the air, asking for touch.
Mm. As you are. How beautiful, Tim. And you are asking for touch.
Yeah.
And the beauty of what you're doing is you will be touched.
Mm-hmm.
As you touch many people now, Tim. Thank you so much for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, Psycho Detective, how are you?
Hiya.
Okay. I seem to be, a lot of people gossip to me. I'm not a gossiper, but I always end up, like, getting the dirt on people, and these are people that I'm going to be involved with. And on one hand, I, like, want to be Armand DeMille, not judge them. And so I just kind of ignore it. But then it ends up being true, a lot of the gossip.
Yeah, so you're listening to people tell stories, and you're listening to the stories that may or may not be true, and you find out it validates something that you need, because you need something, right? What do you need? What do you need from people? Why do people tend to bring this to you in your direction?
Well, I'm a guy who won't tell anybody else. I mean, maybe I'm like the type of guy who wants to hear it, and I'm the one who knows and nobody else knows it.
When you were a kid, were you close to your mom?
Yes. You always seem to ask me that, but I was close
to my
dad,
too. What do you mean, do I always ask you that, no matter when you call? Are you close to your mom? Did your mom talk to you?
But I've called three times.
Did your mom talk to you about your dad?
Yeah, and I had two strong parents.
Yeah, and so your dad talked to you about your mom, too?
Not that much.
No, he wasn't a storyteller, but your mom was a major storyteller. And she would confide with you about your father.
Not that much. I mean, we knew it was, I don't know if there's a pattern there. I'm not saying you're wrong.
Okay, but search for it. Search for it, and you're going to find somewhere you learned how to turn a listening ear. And your listening ear developed, you know, it's part of your anatomy. And when you have a listening ear, it's amazing how people find it when they have talking mouths. And a talking mouth finds a listening ear, and it's kind of perfect. It's like harmony, and it just repeats just how you think you should be on this planet. I wonder what would happen if you said, if it ain't a fact, I don't want to hear it. You'd probably lose a lot of customers.
Actually, funny to say customers, I have a store, and people do talk to me about all sorts of things.
Sure, sure, sure. They like to do that with storekeepers. What kind of a store do you have?
Costumes, balloons, party goods in Brooklyn.
Costumes in Brooklyn of how people could be who they're not. What a wonderful business.
There you go.
A business of disguise. A business of make yourself be something other than you are.
You are the true psycho detective.
I thank you so much.
I love
for
listening to you.
Thanks for calling in.
Be well.
Bye bye. A master of disguise. 212-209-2900. It's Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Jasmine from Flushing. I listen to your program regularly, and I'm from India. Rumors, gossip, what a beautiful subject we have today. And just let me know why, I mean, the celebrities, whenever there is a gossip, whenever something is like that, their magazines or the newspapers, they sell like hotcakes.
I mean, yes, they do, don't they? Because because there's this desire in some way to be connected to the celebrities. You see, the celebrities have power. And if you could in some way be connected to the celebrity by knowing a little about their inside of their lives, if you could say J-Lo is marrying this so-and-so person, and you could talk to other people about it, in a way you become the representative of the celebrity. So if you talk about the celebrity, in effect, you are the celebrity. Uh-huh. And so it just appeals to people's needs to, you know, I mean, we all admire. Jasmine, who do you admire the most? Who would be the person who would be?
I like the celebrity. I mean, here I'm Angelina Jolie. Anyone that comes in the, you know, that's on the front page. I like to read about that. It doesn't matter to which country does it belong.
Okay, but tell me, Jasmine, when you think about Angela Jolie, what do you think about her?
I think about her beauty comes afterwards, but the things what she's doing around, I mean, socially, how she's like Mother Teresa, that thing, you know, that thing, I don't know.
You think that Angelina Jolie is a good person, don't you?
Yeah.
And she's a giving person. Think she's kind as well as beautiful. You think about her and you say, that's the kind of person. Well, what separates her from you? Because you're a kind person and you're a giving person. What makes it different? Her beauty?
Her beauty, her intelligence, and above all is her nature for the human mind. You know, when I was young, I was very, you know, if you show me the different things, different pictures of the celebrities or anything, as a child, you know, whom picture I will admire? I will admire Mother Teresa's. I don't know why I am like Mother Teresa's picture.
Well, let me ask you something. Did you admire your mother? Tell me about your mother. With your mother.
My mother died a long time, 5 years ago. She died of liver cancer, and we came to America, and I was busy with doing 2 jobs. I couldn't really take care of her. I mean, I used to love her, and that thing comes into my mind, and I'm a nurse. I go to the nursing home, and sometimes, you know, I love to be with the old people, with the people who, I don't know why, I love to be like, I'm a young.
I guess what you're saying, Jasmine, is that you had a lot of respect for your mother, and that got projected onto somebody like Mother Teresa, and that got projected onto Angelina Jolie, and I'm sure if each of us searched, we would all find somebody we'd like to be connected with, and the bottom line is that very person is you. That is inside you. You are that very, very person.
Yeah, even after working to shift 16 hours when I come out from the nursing home. Sometimes I'm so tired, but still I think I have not done what I was supposed to do. I should do more. I don't know. That's why it's like that.
So. Yeah, I hear you, Jasmine. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, Anna, it's my pleasure to talk. The pleasure is totally mine. And one thing more. Yesterday in the program, you promised there is a beautiful song with a beautiful lyric. I didn't get a chance to listen.
It'll be
to it.
On my website. Go to my website and you'll find it.
Okay.
Thank you. This is Armand DeMille.
Thank you so much.
This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. And if you wanted to hear this program again, you can go to thepositivemind.com or through WBAI.org. Maybe it's time to stand up and get down, my friends.